A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 24th chapter, verses 19 to 30. Verse 19. My Chevacha, the Chetasapitur Vakyam, Shirasadaya Sadava, Dishampati Chimpaya Yustapasya, Dita Chetasa. The great sage Maitreya continued, My dear Vidura, because of their pious nature, all the sons of Prachinabarhi very seriously accepted the words of their father with heart and soul. And with these words on their heads, they went toward the west to execute their father's order. So we're back out with the Prachetas. In the afternoon, we're with their father, hearing the instructions of Narada Muni. And now here in the morning, we're with the Prachetas who are going out to perform austerities at the same time that their father is being instructed by Narada Muni in the palace. So I'm your correspondent from the Prachetas. We're going to hear what's happening out where they are performing austerities and how they meet Lord Shiva today. So their father wanted to have his sons rule the world after he was ready to leave. So therefore, he sent them out to perform austerities. This was the preparation to become king. So the word tapasya, in this word, is the word tap, or taking the heat. And I was hearing some lectures, or reading actually the lectures from Prabhupada, and he was saying this word tap means heat, temperature, taking the temperature. So sometimes in spiritual life, we have to take the temperature of tapasya. We have to do things we don't normally do, or we would normally avoid doing. And so we do those things for the pleasure of the spiritual master and for Krishna. So what is the goal, what is the purpose of all this austerities in spiritual life? Is to focus the consciousness fully on Krishna, that we are his servant. And if we can have this consciousness always with us, then we can neglect the material comforts of life very easily. So the Prachetas were sent to make their minds very, very strong. To be the ruler, the emperor of the world, you have to become very, very strong-minded. So many opposing elements. Of course, in our spiritual life also, so many opposing elements are there. And so our minds also have to be strong. And of course, sometimes the worst opposing element is the mind itself. It's giving us the most trouble of everything. So the Prachetas were becoming disciplined by performing serious meditation in the water, in the ocean. And this meditation we won't hear about until next week, the prayers of Lord Shiva. What was their meditation? But it's very interesting that they were meditating under the water in the ocean. So how is it possible for someone to meditate in the water for 10,000 years? How can you do that? How is it conceivable? Can we conceive of it logically? Is there a logical way to think about it, that they could actually do it? For a yogi, everything is possible? Yes? He's suggesting they amalgamated all their elements to the water element. Well, that only happens when you're ready to leave your body. Yeah. Right, prana is in all elements, okay? Okay. So you can just live on prana. On prana.
I know one person, she was living on snow.
Eating snow.
For half a year, nothing else. She was walking every day, miles up the mountain.
And just eating snow. When we were in Mayapur with Srila Prabhupada, he said, in Mayapur, you can live only on air. He said, the air is full of prana in Mayapur. Just can live on the air. So, of course, in the water, I don't know how much air they're going to get there. There is air in the water. What's another alternative? Yes, Adi Purush. Okay, this is the alternative for yogis. They stopped their breathing for 10,000 years.
Yes. There were some cases
nowadays also.
Documented where a yogi would have his nostrils sealed with wax,
right,
and put into earth for like 2-3 days, 2 weeks.
And 2 weeks.
They would come back to life.
Come back to life. Even nowadays, there are yogis who can do that. Srila Prabhupada, I was also reading a lecture, Prabhupada said that you go to Kumbh Mela, he said he saw some yogis there. They're 700 years old, 500 years old, but they looked like 25, 30 years old. So, but he said he saw 200 years old, 300 years old, 500 years old yogis. So if you want to see such things, even today, you can go to Kumbh Mela, because how will you know which one's 500 years old and such. Anyway, this is how they did it. They can stop their breathing. So, if you're not breathing, it's easy to live underwater.
Water
dissolves everything. Right. Of course, we do have one thing we have to remember is we got Kali Yuga bodies too. But of course, what kind of bodies they had, I don't know exactly. Yeah, it's true. Your body would dissolve. So, but Hiranyakashipu did it. He was living in his skeleton only. Shobari Muni, he was doing it in the Jamuna River. Yeah. Who? Duryodhana, yeah. After the bow of Kurukshetra, he went under the water. Indra was, he went underwater, but he was in the stem of a lotus. So it's quite different. Anyway, there are ways that this can happen. Believe it or not. So the Prachetas, down in the water, they could really focus without distraction. So it's a very good place for meditation. We'll find out that this, the water, the ocean where they went was a very special body of water, also very conducive for meditation. So in this purport of 19, Srila Prabhupada describes what is a sadhu. Prabhupada says, in this verse, sadhava, meaning pious or well-behaved, is very important, especially at the present moment. It is derived from the word sadhu. A perfect sadhu is one who is always engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prachinavahi's sons are described as sadhava because of their complete obedience to their father. So here, again, in this verse, on their heads, shirasa. Remember, we heard that before. Abhirajan Prabhu brought that point up in his class, at shirasa, on their heads. Remember what Abhirajan Prabhu said that meant? Yeah.
He says the head is
the top of the body. Means humility.
Yes.
What does Srila Prabhupada say in this purport? What is Prabhupada's opinion about what is the shirasa? Full surrender. So they carried their order with full surrender. Verse 20. While traveling, the Prachetas happened to see a great reservoir of water which seemed almost as big as the ocean. The water of this lake was so calm and quiet, it seemed like the mind of a great soul. And its inhabitants, the aquatics, appeared to be very peaceful and happy to be under the protection of such a watery reservoir. So we look at the purport a few lines down. Considering all these points, the reservoir of water which was seen by the Prachetas while they were traveling was actually a large bay or lake. And unlike the sea or ocean, which has turbulent waves, this reservoir was very calm and quiet. Indeed, the water was so clear it seemed like the mind of some great soul. Then a few more lines down. A devotee's mind is always calm, quiet, and desireless because he's always on Yavilashita Shunyam, having no desire other than to serve Krishna as his beloved personal servant, friend, father, mother, or conjugal lover. Due to his association with Krishna, a devotee is always very calm and cool. So this is the key. How to remain calm in this turbulent world. That you have to be so fixed in your desire for Krishna that nothing disturbs you. And that way you can control the mind. So at the end of paragraph 1, It is also significant within that reservoir, all the aquatics are also very calm and quiet. Because the disciples of a devotee have taken shelter of a great soul, they become very calm and quiet and are not agitated by the waves of the material world. So there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita that is you can think of when you think of this, how a devotee is undisturbed by all the waves. The waves are coming, they're washing over, but they don't disturb the mind. There's a couple of verses actually. 270, yes. Apurimanam machalam pratishtam. What's another verse? 5th chapter, I'm thinking of one. Just like a lotus is untouched by water. Brahman yadaya karmani, is that it? Sangan chapta karoti sa. Lipyate nasapatena. So these verses in Bhagavad Gita, 5:10, that verse, and 270, they can give us an idea of what is the state of mind of such a devotee. So many desires are coming in, and he's not agitated. He's fixed. So what is he fixed on? What is the disciple fixed on? We were discussing. What is that? Guru's order, yes. He's fixed on the order. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, we discussed that in our last class. He says, I don't care if this world is destroyed. I don't care. All I have to think of is the order of the spiritual master. That's my only meditation. So that's the only way we can remain. What is Krishna's advice in Bhagavad Gita? When difficulties happen, when the waves start washing over us, what should we do? Matras parshast kuntaya. Tam stitikshasa bharata. There's no alternative but to tolerate, because we can't change it. So then, back in the purport, Prabhupada says, therefore, whoever takes shelter of a great soul, a great devotee, becomes pacified. Chaitanya Chaitamrita is dead. Krishna bhakta nishkam atayva shanta. A devotee of Lord Krishna is always peaceful because he has no desire. Whereas the yogis, karmis, and jnanis have so many desires to fulfill. One may argue devotees have desires, for they wish to go home, back to Godhead. No? But such a desire does not agitate the mind. So here, Prabhupada says, it's okay. If you have a desire to go back to Godhead, it's approved. Yes, Sankirtan. Text 15. Yes, devotee should not consider whether he's going back to home, back to Godhead. So how do we reconcile this?
So he's not overly concerned.
Yes. He has a desire to go back to Godhead, to serve Krishna nicely without impediment. But at the same time, it's not like he's willing to sacrifice that, even that desire, for the pleasure of Krishna. That is Lord Chaitanya's prayer. Natanam. Vyajanam nasumirim kalidam va chakadish kame mama jamani jamani shre bhavachai bhaktirai chikitve jamani jamani shre. So if we think about that, jamani jamani shre, then actually it also means this life. It means that even in this life we have to accept our position. What position, what condition Krishna has put us in. So oftentimes devotees, they're very anxious to go to their next life so that they can be janmani, janmani, but this life they don't want. I see this sometimes in devotees' mentality. They just want to leave. I just want to leave this body because this body is useless and I can't do anything, and next life will be better and I can do janmani, janmani shre. But actually, we also have to be accepting of this life and this body, whatever condition we're in. So this is, that also is not caring to go back to Godhead, even in this life. So, we're still in the purport. Although he wishes to go back to Godhead, a devotee is satisfied in any condition of life. Consequently, the word Mahamana is used in this verse to indicate that the reservoir of water was as calm and quiet as the mind of a great devotee. So, many months ago, I heard a class by Bhakti Vigyan Swami. He was lecturing on the holy name. And he brought up one very interesting point. That is, Similar to this point is how a devotee is satisfied in any condition of life. And it correlates with one of the verses of Shikshastakam. Does anybody have a clue? Which verse of Shikshastaka explains this condition of mind of a devotee who is... Nachanam? Last one. Yes? Ashishava. Yes, that's what he said, Ashishava. Actually, it comes much before that. It's Chunarapi Sunichena. Taraiva Sahishna. So one of the qualities that develops in the heart of a person who is chanting offenselessly is not to expect anything from anyone. So if you don't expect anything from anyone, that means you're satisfied in all conditions. If you're expecting something, not even if you're not expecting from anyone in this world, still we may expect something from Krishna. Well, at least Krishna, he should give me, he should facilitate me in this way. But no, not expecting anything from anyone, amanina. And this is the real definition of humility. So these are the qualities that the prachetas have, and these are the qualities that we also must have to be serious in spiritual life. So there is a pastime of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, cleansing the Gundisha temple. I'll just read one or two verses. Emata shapuri kaila sharan shita nirmal kaila yanane chaman. That the temple of Gundisha was completely cleansed and cleared, cool and spotless, just like one's cleansed and pacified mind. So shital and nirmal, these are the qualities of mind that we need to make advancement in spiritual life. So how do we become like the ocean, like this very pacified, satisfied ocean? What do we have to do? First, chetad, exactly. That's what Prabhupada says. Chetad arpanam arjanam. That's what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says. Chetad arpanam arjanam. So Prabhupada says, if you want to see Krishna sitting in your heart, first you have to clean the heart. So that's how the mind of the pure devotee, it's so pure and clean, because he's always cleaning the heart. He's always, of course, his heart is already clean. But we have to do the work of cleaning the heart. Not all the work, we just have to chant, and then Krishna in the heart does the work. What verse says that? Shinvatam Sokata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana. Yes. So Krishna, Prabhupada says, this is a simple process. If a devotee wants to cleanse his heart, he must chant and hear the glories of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Shinvatam Sokata Krishna. Krishna himself will help cleanse the heart because he's already seated there. Krishna is already in our heart, so he'll help clean it out if we're chanting. Then again, if the heart is filled with straw, grains of sand, weeds or dust, anyabhilashe purna, one cannot enthrone Krishna there. So these things have to be removed. Now we'll hear more about the abode of Lord Shiva. Verse 21. In that great lake, there were different types of lotus flowers. Some of them were bluish, and some of them were red. Some of them grew at night, and some in the day, and some, like the Indira lotus flower, in the evening. Combined together, the lotus flowers filled the lake so full that the lake appeared to be a great mine of such flowers. Consequently, on the shores, there were swans and cranes, Chakravaka, Karandava, and other beautiful water birds standing about. Verse 22. There were various trees and creepers on all sides of that lake, and there were mad bumblebees humming all about them. The trees appeared to be very jolly due to the sweet humming of the bumblebees, and the saffron, which was contained in the lotus flowers, was being thrown into the air. These all created such an atmosphere. It appeared as though a festival were taking place there. So the trees, the creepers, the bees, the birds, they're all having a festival, and the wind throwing up in the air, throwing the saffron. So did anyone ever see a jolly tree? Prabhupada says there's jolly trees in the purport. When does a tree become jolly? When you water it. I guess, yeah, that's one way a tree becomes jolly, if you water the root. Yeah? Oh, you can see when the trees are jolly when the flowers come out, when they blossom. Yes, when they bloom. Prabhupada says another thing in the purport, how the trees become jolly, jolly trees. When the bees come. Let's see what Prabhupada says in the purport. Trees and creepers are also different types of living beings. When bumblebees come upon trees and creepers to collect honey, certainly such plants become very happy. So the next time you see a bee, bees coming on the plants, you know they're making the plants very happy, taking their pollen. On such an occasion, the wind also takes advantage of the situation by throwing pollen or saffron contained in the lotus flowers. All this combines with the sweet vibration created by the swans and the calm of the water. Pachetas consider such a place to be like a continuous festival. So this is what's going on at Shiva's place, Lord Shiva's place. Constant festival. So next, verse 23. The sons of the king became very much amazed when they heard vibrations from various drums and kettle drums along with other orderly musical sounds pleasing to the ear. So now the Gandharvas are going to join in the singing and the festival. Verse 24-25. The Prachetas were fortunate to see Lord Shiva, the chief of the demigods, emerging from the water with his associates. His bodily luster was just like molten gold. His throat was bluish, and he had three eyes, which looked very mercifully upon his devotees. He was accompanied by many musicians who were glorifying him. As soon as the Prachetas saw Lord Shiva, they immediately offered their obeisances in great amazement and fell down at the lotus feet of the Lord. So we'll start at the end of the first paragraph here. Because Lord Shiva is always very, very merciful, his name is Ashutosh. Amongst all the demigods, Lord Shiva can be pacified even by the lowest class of men, who need only offer him obeisances and leaves of a bale tree. Thus his name is Ashutosh, which means he's pleased very quickly. So, Patri Prabhu, last year I remember you told me something about worshipping Lord Shiva. What was that about? You can satisfy him with the leaves of a bale tree, maybe in 15 days or something, I remember. I think it was you who told me that. Anyway, it takes only about, how many? 40. 40 days. You just offer leaves of a bale tree and Ganga water. And Lord Shiva will be pleased. So that's why people worship him. That's why they go worship Shiva. It only takes 40 days. For Krishna, it'll take, you know, your whole life. And even then, you may have to still go on. But Lord Shiva is very easily pleased. Generally, those who are very fond of material prosperity approach Lord Shiva for such benediction. The Lord, being very merciful, quickly awards all the blessings a devotee asks of him. The demons take advantage of this leniency and sometimes take benedictions from Lord Shiva, which can be very dangerous to others. For instance, Vrikashura took a benediction from Lord Shiva by which he could kill everyone he touched on the head. Although Lord Shiva sometimes very liberally gives such benedictions to his devotees, the difficulty is that the demons, being very cunning, sometimes want to experiment improperly with such benedictions. For instance, after receiving his benediction, Vrikashura tried to touch the head of Lord Shiva. Devotees of Lord Vishnu, however, have no desire for such benedictions, and Lord Vishnu does not give his devotees benedictions which would cause disturbance to the whole world. So therefore, Prabhupada says, don't think about worshipping Lord Shiva. Just be satisfied with Lord Vishnu, because he'll give you the best thing. And another purport, Prabhupada will go into more detail about that. So I was thinking that we have with us, in this modern day and age, we have demons living in this world. So I was just trying to imagine if some of the scientists, if they were to ask a boon from Lord Shiva, what would they ask? Anybody have ideas on that? What would the demons ask from Lord Shiva? Nobody has ideas. Anyway, you can just think about it. They want to conquer death, actually. They want to be immortal. But Lord Shiva, fortunately, Lord Shiva can't give that to the demons. He may give it to the devotees, but not the demons. Yes. How to create animals. How to create, yes. Birth, death. Birth and death. And old age and disease. These are the main problems facing humanity, which the scientists have been unable to solve. But they always promise that they will solve. So these things. So I have a little excerpt here from, this is a magazine on Lord Shiva, from Sri Krishna Kathamrita. I read quite a bit from it last time when we were hearing the Daksha Yagya. So I'll just read a little bit today on this pastime of Rikashura. So the words, when Lord Krishna came to save Lord Shiva, Krishna spoke to Rikashura, "You're a fool. Do you believe in the words of Shiva? I never believe what he says. He's a madman, naked fellow. He's put a garland of snakes and bones. His whole body is smeared with ashes. He lives at the crematorium. Does anyone believe the words of a naked fellow who's always dancing like a madman? You believe? You're such a wise man, nice person. Why are you running? Why don't you test the boon by putting your hand on your own head? And when you see it's a lie, you should kill Shiva. That liar should be killed." So these are the words of Krishna. Then, of course, Vikashura said, "Oh yes, that's a very nice idea." And he put his hand on his head and Shiva was saved. So in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Lord Brahma is glorifying Lord Shiva, especially with this pastime of Vikashura. Lord Brahma says, "Krishna never gets angry with Shiva, but he got angry with me when I gave that boon to Hiranyakashipu. After the death of Rikashura, Krishna spoke very soft, sweet words to Shiva." And these words are quoted in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 88th chapter, verses 38 to 39. And these are the words of Lord Krishna. Muktam girisham abhyaha bhagavan purushottama ho deva mahadeva papoyam svena papmana hata konu mahatso Isha jantarvai kritakirisha kshemisya kyam vishveshe kitagasko jagaguru. This is 10:88, 38 to 39. O Jagaguru Mahadev, this demon rascal was killed because of his sinful reactions. You are Jagaguru Mahajan. If someone commits aparad to a Mahajan and Jagaguru like you, how will he get any kalyan, auspiciousness? So then, Brahma says, so he always speaks such nice, sweet words to Shiva. Krishna never gets angry with him. Narada, you can understand how Shiva is very dear to Lord Krishna. Not only that, Shiva is so dear to Lord Krishna that in his incarnation as Parashuram and Ramchandra, Krishna even offered worship to Shiva. So these are the verses from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Again, two more verses from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Ishtatapi svayam saksha krishnena mitamantane pajapati viraratya sakari pranavallava samanaya visham karam payitva vibhushita mahamihami tarabhi abhishiktas shatat smitam. When the demigods and demons were churning the milk ocean to get amrita nectar, a very dreadful poison, bish, came out, and everyone became frightened. No one knew what to do with it. Nobody wanted to take it. When all the good things came out, everyone took what they wanted. But when the poison came out, everyone became afraid. Neither the demons nor demigods were prepared to take it. Krishna was also present there. If he would have cast his nectarian merciful glance on that poison, it immediately would have turned into nectar. But he didn't do it. So why didn't Krishna do it? Why didn't Krishna? Exactly. Rather, Krishna told me, Brahma, you go to Shiva, offer worship to him, satisfy him, and request him to come and save you from this danger. He will drink the poison. So I went there, offered worship to Shiva, and pleased him. And Shiva came and drank all the poison. Lord Krishna could have done it, but he didn't, because he wanted to give credit to his very dear intimate friend, Shiva, and show that Shiva should be worshipped. So this is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This is the qualities of Lord Shiva. So now in this next verse, we'll hear some more wonderful qualities of Lord Shiva, which we also discussed previously in the Daksha Yagya. Satan tapanati haro bhagavanta mavatsala dharma gyan shiva sambhanan pitta pitta nivachaha. Lord Shiva became very pleased with the prachetas because generally Lord Shiva is the protector of pious persons and persons of gentle behavior. Being very much pleased with the princes, he began to speak as follows. So there is a very important Sanskrit word here. What is that Sanskrit word describing Lord Shiva? Dharma Vatsala. Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala, but Lord Shiva is Dharma Vatsala. So two meanings of Dharma Vatsala, which Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport. What are those two meanings of Dharma Vatsala that apply to Lord Shiva? He personally lives according to religious principles. So that's one meaning of Dharma Vatsala. Another meaning of Dharma Vatsala, according to Srila Prabhupada's purport.
He's kind to those who follow.
Yes. He's kind to those who follow any religious principles. So he's really on the extreme. Remember we discussed, what was that word? Mahatma? Mahatara? What was that? Mahatma. Mahata, Mahatara, Mahatma. So Mahata is great. I don't remember all the meanings. The greatest. So what were the qualities of Mahata?
Those who see good and bad.
Those who see good and bad. Okay, Mahatara, they see good and bad, but they turn their attention to good. Okay. So this is Lord Shiva. If he sees even the smallest good, he's Mahatma. He was described like that in previous verses. Mahatma. He sees the slightest good, he magnifies it. He doesn't see any bad. So this is the quality of Lord Shiva, and that's why all the people in the mode of ignorance are very dear to him. They worship Lord Shiva. Dharma Vatsala. This is near the end of the purport. Srila Prabhupada says, as soon as Lord Shiva sees his devotees are following religious principles, he blesses them. The Prachetas, son of Pachanabarhi, were naturally very pious and gentle, and consequently, Lord Shiva was immediately pleased with them. Lord Shiva could understand the princes were sons of Vaishnavas, and as such, Lord Shiva offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as follows. So verse 27, Lord Shiva said, you are all the sons of King Prachanabarhi, and I wish all good fortune to you. I also know what you are going to do, and therefore I am visible to you just to show my mercy upon you. So there's a very interesting sentence in this purport. It's about four lines down. It really struck me. This indicates that a person who is not yet a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but who desires to serve the Supreme Lord, receives the benedictions of the demigods headed by the chief demigod, Lord Shiva. So what does this mean? He's not yet a devotee of Krishna, but he desires to serve Krishna. And he gets the benedictions of the demigods. What's an example of this? Any examples? Yeah. Narada Muni came to see Dhruva. Right. Okay, you're comparing Dhruva and Narada Muni to this example. Yes. I think it happens to a lot of people before they join ISKCON also, before they become devotees, that one example I remember of one person. He was living in Maharashtra, and every day in his childhood he used to go up 2 kilometers or 2 miles up a mountain to worship Lord Shiva. Every day in his childhood. So possibly he had that desire to worship, to serve the Supreme Lord, although maybe he did not know who the Supreme Lord was. And when he met the devotees, and immediately he became a Vaishnava. Sometimes this happens. Thus, a devotee of the Lord does not need to try to please the demigods separately. Simply by worshipping the Supreme Lord, a devotee can please all of them. So what verse supports this statement? What's that? Akama sarvakama va mokshikama utarati. What other verse? Yata taramula nishechane na tupyanti taskanda vishopashaka pranapaha rascha yatendriyanam. So that verse we hear again and again, and it applies also to this purport. Nor does he have to ask the demigods. So Prabhupada is again and again making sure we don't start worshipping Lord Shiva independently of Lord Krishna. That is, we have to see Lord Shiva with Lord Krishna. Nor does he have to ask the demigods for material benedictions, for the demigods, being pleased with the devotee, automatically offer him everything he needs. Sometimes we go to astrologers, and the astrologers say, okay, if you want to get over this impediment, then you have to chant this mantra to this demigod or that demigod. Often that happens, even with devotees. If you chant this mantra to Lord Shiva so many times, then this impediment will be removed. Prabhupada says, not necessary. The demigods, sometimes we forget. We're so much in Krishna consciousness, but sometimes we forget. Because I have had devotees ask me, well, should I chant this mantra? Yes. Invisible chain. Thread. Yes. There's an invisible thread, yes, between the devotees and the demigods. Demigods are servants of the Lord, and they are always prepared to help the devotee in all circumstances. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, if one has unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Lord, the goddess of liberation is ready to serve him, to say nothing of the gods of material opulences. Indeed, all the demigods are simply waiting for an opportunity to serve the devotee. Thus, there is no need for a devotee of Krishna to endeavor for material opulence or liberation. By being situated in the transcendental position of devotional service, he receives all the benefits of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So what verses support this point, that you don't have to endeavor for liberation? Liberation automatically comes. Moksha laguta krit. Any other verses from anywhere? Mam cha yogi abhichayena bhakti yogi sevate. 14:26. Any other verses? I have a verse here from Kapiladev. Jariyatya shuyakosham nirgirna manalo yata. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body, living entity, without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. So the prayer of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktis Thais Tirarata Bhagavan Yadisya Daivena Na Falati Divya Kishora Murti Mukti Swayam Mukulitanjali Sevate Sman Paramartha Kama Kataya Samaya Pratiksha. If I am engaged in your service, automatically liberation will come. Liberation stands at my door with folded hands. So, what is the way that we ourselves can experience this liberation? What is our process? What is actually the means for us to experience this, even in this life? Yes? We get liberated from our bad habits. So how do we do that? Falling before we get principles, okay? That's on the negative side. On the positive side, we chant. Cheti Tarpana Marjanam. Actually, Haridas Thakur, it was his disappearance day on Monday, I think. So I'll just give you a few verses from Haridas Thakur. He says, Keho bole nam hoite hoi papa koi. Some say, by chanting the holy name, one is free from all reactions of sinful life. Others say, by chanting the holy name, one attains liberation from all material bondage. Haridas kahe, name vedu phalanai, name phale krishna phale prema upajai. Haridas Thakur, however, says the desired result of chanting the holy name is not liberation or freedom from reactions. It is Krishna prema. So even though you chant and you make it liberation, you may get even from namavas, you get liberation. The real fruit is Krishna prema. So my next question is that Madhavendra Puri Prabhu mentioned this invisible chain from the demigods to the devotees on earth. Has anybody ever experienced that? Or have an example? Patri, you have experienced it. This invisible chain. How did the demigods help you? No. Or you disagree?
He has 100
stories. Oh, 100 stories, I know. He's full of stories. Yes? Okay. You want to tell one of his stories?
Not his
story. Oh, you got one. Yes?
It's not exactly demigods, but something interesting. Maybe it came out. There was once Sankirtan devotees were distributing books somewhere in Belarus.
Distributing books in Belarus.
They rang the doorbell at some flat, and then the person opened and said, "Oh, you have come. Please come in. I'm waiting for you."
Wow.
They were surprised.
So the man in the door, they rang the doorbell, he said, "Please come in, I've been waiting for you."
And so he explained to them that, "I got a Bible, I read the Bible, but I wasn't satisfied. And I was praying very fervently, oh Lord, please send me more knowledge about yourself, about your kingdom."
Wow.
So last night I had a dream. A few angels came and said that today more knowledge would come.
Whoa. Right.
Now you are here.
Okay. So, and he was saying, in my dream, I saw some angels, and he was praying. He got the Bible. He said, "Please give me more knowledge." So then he had a dream. Some angels came and said, "Yes, today you will get that knowledge." And then the devotees came to his door, and so he understood that this was the more knowledge. Okay, so the demigods. I also have a story from when Prabhupada was here. This is from the memories of Shyamasundar, Prabhupada's disciple, that in the early days, of course, we actually most of the time we had no money. We were living very, very austerely in the early days. So when they were trying to start the movement in London, they made friends with George Harrison. And so it was a very nice relationship between Shyamasundar and George Harrison, like brothers almost. But Shyamasundar would never ask him for money. So one day Prabhupada called in Shyamasundar and said, "I need $19,000 to print Krishna book. And so you please ask George." And Shyamasundar was thinking, "Oh no, no, I'm going to ruin my whole relationship with George. I have to ask him for money." So then the day came, he went to George's house. George wasn't there. And so he was waiting with prasadam and flowers, and which he usually gave to George. And so George came, he gave him all the gifts, and they sat down at the table, and they were talking, and then he popped the question. He said, "I need $19,000. Oh, wait, I need some money." He didn't say exactly how much. He said, "I need some money. We need money to print some books for Srila Prabhupada." And as soon as he said that, George's face went black. And he said, "You're just like all the others. You just want money." And then at that point, lights went out, and a bolt of lightning struck the house. And then the lights went on, and George said, "How much do you want?" So the demigods were helping at that point. The pure devotee had a desire to print Krishna book, and the demigods sent a bolt of lightning to help out. Yeah, we have...
Actually, just a few weeks ago,
okay. Recent news. The Polish festival.
There was a very big event that was scheduled to take place in the biggest summer station on the coast of Poland.
Right.
And the Indian ambassador was supposed to come.
To who?
Indian
ambassador was supposed to come to this big event at the Polish festival.
It was a really big thing because that Indian ambassador, he had been converted some years back, and it was a total fiasco, and he was offended.
Okay, a few years back he had been invited, and it was a big fiasco, and he was offended. So now he was ready to come to the Polish festival. Oh, you were there.
Oh.
Okay. Well, let her speak. She speaks louder.
No, that's not important.
Okay, you speak. You speak louder than her.
So anyway, everything was organized, and the devotees had the best place in town. Everything.
So the devotees were there. Everything was organized.
The weather was perfect.
The weather was perfect.
Then, just the day before the festival, huge storms came.
Just the day before, huge storms came. It was pouring and pouring.
So they called the weatherman, and he said that for the next 3 days, it would be non-stop.
Okay, they called the weather forecaster. He said 3 days non-stop rain.
Including hailstorms.
Hail, also hail.
So the day morning of the festival, you know, like pouring.
So the morning of the festival, pouring rain. So they did Harinam and the wind was howling.
Anyway, at 5 o'clock, Maharaj's right hand woman phoned saying, the ambassador's coming, I'm bringing with the mayor. The mayor was coming.
So, okay, the ambassador and the mayor were coming. Where? To the festival. To
the festival. And it was empty.
And it was empty. Oh my God. Okay, just before the ambassador came, a huge, strong ray of light came through the clouds.
And the clouds
were dispersing.
And then so many people came.
They were tired of being cooped up in their houses.
And they all flooded the festival ground.
Then
the program took place, everything went well. And just after the festival finished that evening,
pouring rain. So it stopped just for the festival?
And for 3 days the same thing happened.
3 days the same thing happened. It stopped when the festival started, and it started again after the festival.
That's
for 3 days.
Latest.
And actually for the Panchatattva, when they were the same thing happened. I just came to my mind. When they were pouring all the molten metals for making, I don't remember which deity it was, maybe Lord Chaitanya, Mahaprabhu. One of the deities. Advaita it was.
It's near Advaita.
Okay, it's near your town. So they were.
It happened like this, they are going to pour, surrounding 1 kilometer, there is so much rain.
So much rain, it was pouring rain, and they said if one drop of water gets in that, it's ruined. That's what the stapati.
Actually, if it is blast, then so many things get out.
Yeah, there could be an explosion. See, if a drop of water gets in, there can be an explosion of the metal and everyone around would get injured. So he said that, you know, we cannot, if there is any drop that gets into this molten metal, then we cannot do the casting, or it's very dangerous. So there was huge rain on the day of the casting, right? And Janardivas said, don't worry, I'll pray to Lord Nrisingadev. So what happened? So all the stapatis came. The other stapatis.
Yeah,
they said, how he's going to do this? There's so much rain. Because they had so much faith in Jananivas, they did it. They started.
But nothing has happened. But in and around there is a rain, but there is not rain in the particular place.
Okay. So there was rain all around. It was raining. But right where they were doing the casting, there was no rain. It was just a place right in the middle where there was no rain, and all around it was pouring like anything. But just right where they were doing the casting, it was completely no rain. So that is the power of Lord Nrisingadev and Jananivas. Yes? Yeah, it's true.
The next day again it was sun.
It was sun. For Radhashtami we had clouds. And the next day was sun. It's true. So, yes?
There was one devotee who was chanting very fervently in the rounds in the church.
In church?
Yes.
A devotee was chanting his rounds in church. Where? In France. Well, I guess it's best place. Sankirtan devotee.
And he was
fervently chanting his rounds in the church.
One man
He thought he was the priest. One man came in the church, thought he was the priest. Gave him a huge donation. Since I'm looking for someone to give donation, you're praying so fervently. He thought he was in charge of the church. Well, yeah, he was in charge of the church. So the devotee said, thank you very much, and left. So anybody who wants to collect a lot of money, you can think of following this example. He was coming to give a donation to the church. Yes. Demigods, okay. Yeah, the demigods have something to do with it. All right, so let's go on. We're still in this verse. Oh, no, we'll go to verse 28. So you can think about that. And I'm sure it happens also in your life if you think about it. It happens all the time, actually. The demigods help the devotees. Okay, one more. You worship Shiva, okay. Okay, you couldn't accept Krishna as supreme. You were worshipping Lord Shiva. So you were going to regularly to the Shiva temple and saying, I don't know who's supreme, please tell me. And slowly you became Krishna conscious. Yes, Patri, you got a story finally for us. You were preaching with one devotee?
In Bangladesh.
Bangladesh. And the devotee is from Russia, okay? Your visa expired, you came back to India.
And I just missed that devotee, I didn't see him.
You missed him? You didn't see him for a long time.
3 years actually, I saw him in Bengal. He was walking in black tantric
robe. Oh my God. So after a few years, he met this devotee in Vrindavan walking in black tantric cloth. All desires are fulfilled in Vrindavan. Completely skinny? Yeah. All in black. Big long robes. Yes, we've seen people like that here. And you were thinking, are you this person?
Yes, Patri.
So yes, Patri, please come. I'll teach you some special mantras. At Krishna Balaram Temple. Oh, this is heavy. I don't know. What?
So after 1 year probably, I saw him in Delhi temple. I was taking praying for that Bhakti.
Yeah, so next time you saw him in Delhi temple, you didn't take the special mantras. Okay, so you did. He preached to him, you're crazy, just chant Hare Krishna.
No, he didn't do that. And after 1 year, I saw probably in
Delhi temple, you were praying. Somebody caught your feet. Somebody by force grabbed his feet.
And I saw back. It was the same devotee in tantric clothes.
Oh, no.
And he was having my feet.
He was in tantric clothes.
What are you doing, you know? So, and he told me that he was doing all sorts of things. Burning God.
Oh, he was at the burning God doing his tantra. Yeah, I'm sure. Heavy tapasya near the dead bodies.
So I found that he didn't wash himself.
No bath. For months. Right. Oh, he came out from his body.
Go back to Krishna. So he was almost dying. He was feeling
yeah.
And Lord Shiva came to the voice.
The voice.
That you nonsense, go back to the room.
So he.
And he ran and he came to the temple, and all Ramachandra was giving him there. So he was doing that. So he came back there.
Oh. Okay, so this proves that Tantra does not pay. Crime does not pay, even in the subtle. Because it comes back to you, actually. So he got out of his body, to make a long story short, and he came to Delhi and grabbed Patri by the feet and said, he was out of his body and he went to Kailash, and there he heard the voice of Lord Shiva saying, "You, from the sky, you nonsense, go back to Krishna." So Lord Shiva is very merciful. He's Ashutosh in more ways than one. He's merciful to the real devotees. The devotees will see that. I think one verse is coming up. So, Prabhupada, at the end of this, now we're on verse 28. This is the mind. Lord Shiva is revealing his mind. Ya paramangasa saksha chiguna jiva sangita bhagavantam vasudevam prapana sapiyovine. Lord Shiva continued, any person who is surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, controller of everything, material nature, as well as the living entity, is actually very dear to me. So this devotee, he surrendered once and he became dear to Lord Krishna. And Krishna helped him to go back. So this is so wonderful. So this is purport paragraph 2, near the end. Yam Brahma Ravanan Maruta Maruta Stuvanti Divyastavai. Krishna is worshipped by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Varuna, Indra, Chanda, and all other demigods. That is also the situation with a devotee. Indeed, one who takes to Krishna consciousness immediately becomes very dear to anyone who is simply finding out and beginning to understand what Krishna consciousness actually is. So there's another very interesting statement by Srila Prabhupada. Anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness becomes dear to someone who is simply finding out and beginning to understand what Krishna consciousness actually is. Similarly, all the demigods are also trying to find out who is actually surrendered to Lord Vasudeva. So the demigods are trying to find out who is a real devotee. And that's one of our themes in this canto. Who is a devotee? We saw so many devotees in this canto. Who is a real devotee? And that's a question now also. Who is a real devotee of Lord Krishna? Who is really surrendered? And the answer is, time will tell. Time will tell who is really surrendered to Lord Krishna. Because the Pracheta princes were surrendered to Vasudeva, Lord Shiva willingly came forth to see them. So end of the purport, Prabhupada says there are many so-called devotees, but actually they're only karmis and gyanis, for they are not directly devotees of Lord Krishna. The karmis sometimes offer results of their activities to Lord Vasudeva, and this offering is called karmarpanam. These are considered to be fruitive activities, for the karmis consider Lord Vishnu to be one of the demigods, like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. So this is in India. We have many people, they may worship Krishna or Vishnu, but they're thinking, well, he's the same. Vishnu, Krishna, Shiva, it's all one. So this is a so-called devotee. It's not a real devotee. Prabhupada is explaining to us who is not a devotee. Because they consider Lord Vishnu to be on the same level with the demigods, they contend surrendering to the demigods is as good as surrendering to Vasudeva. This contention is denied herein, because if it were true, Lord Shiva would have said, surrender to him, Lord Vasudeva, Vishnu or Brahma is the same. However, Lord Shiva does not say this, because he himself surrenders unto Vasudeva, and whoever else surrenders unto Vasudeva is very, very dear to him. This is expressed herein openly. Conclusion is, devotee of Lord Shiva is not dear to Lord Shiva, but a devotee of Lord Krishna is very dear to Lord Shiva. So this is Lord Shiva's mentality, that actually my devotees, they're okay, but actually who I really love is a devotee of Lord Krishna. This is Lord Shiva's mentality. And the Prachetas, later on, when they meet, because of this fortunate, auspicious meeting with Lord Shiva, later on they get the darshan of Lord Vishnu. And there's a verse where they appreciate this meeting with Lord Shiva. It's 4:30-38. They say, Vayam chisakshat bhagavan bhavasya priyasya sakyukshana sangamena sudishti chiktasya bhavasya mityor. Dear Lord, By virtue of a moment's association with Lord Shiva, who is very dear to you, who is your most intimate friend, we were fortunate to attain you. So this is an account of our great fortune, they say. We have got your darshan. And this is all because Lord Shiva is your intimate friend, Priyasa Sakyu. This is 4:30-38. Now in this purport, and we've heard this before, that sometimes it is said in the scriptures, Prabhupada brings this point out, that Lord Shiva is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how is Lord Shiva non-different? This is the question. How is Lord Shiva non-different from Lord Vishnu? What is the sameness of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu? Yes?
They're controllers.
You don't have your computer with you today. Yes. Okay, they're all, yes, this is what Adi Purusha said. Actually, in the purport to 4:30-38, Srila Prabhupada says, the point is, they are so intimately connected, there is no difference in opinion. This is their oneness. No difference of opinion. And this is the point. They have the same mind, actually. If you were to examine the mind of Lord Shiva, the mind of Lord Krishna, it's the same. Same mind, same opinion. And what is that opinion? Prabhupada says, the only master is Krishna and all other his devotees, servants. This is the real fact, and there is no difference of opinion between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. So Lord Shiva, he is in the mood of servant to Lord Krishna. This is the no difference of opinion. Krishna is Lord, yes. Yeah, there's a battle between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna at that time. Lord Shiva defending, who was it, Banasura? Banasura. He was defending Banasura because it was his promise. So there, of course, he was defeated. And it wasn't the first time Lord Shiva was defeated by Lord Krishna. But who knows why he went there? What were the inner reasons? Perhaps he wanted to get darshan of Lord Krishna also. It's very difficult to get to see the beautiful form of Shyam Sundar. He got the yawning weapon. Anyway, yes, that's a point. So how come, if they're of the same opinion, how come he was fighting with Lord Krishna? Yes. What is the answer to that? Lila. Yes. Even Balaram sometimes fights with Krishna in Krishna Loka. And so, what are their mentalities? Actually, he's like Lord Shiva is from Sankarshan. And so, these are the moods as service, also. And of course, he could also have fought with him to prove that Lord Krishna is superior. That actually he would be defeated by Lord Krishna. You probably knew already ahead of time that he was going to be defeated. So verse 29 is a very interesting verse. Svatar manishta shata janma bhikuman virenchatam eti tataparam himam avyakitam bhagavachata vaishnavam param yataham vibhuta kalakye. A person who executes his occupational duty properly for 100 births becomes qualified to occupy the post of Brahma. And if he becomes more qualified, he can approach Lord Shiva. A person who is directly surrendered to Lord Krishna or Vishnu in unalloyed devotional service is immediately promoted to the spiritual planets. Lord Shiva and other demigods attain these planets after the destruction of this material world. So this is a very important verse for those who think Krishna and Shiva and they're all one. Actually, there is a difference. First is Brahma, then Shiva, and then Vishnu is the highest in Vaikuntha Loka. So purport. Prabhupada gives a very interesting purport here. This verse gives an idea of the highest perfection of the evolutionary process. As described in by the Vaishnava poet Jayadev Goswami, Palaya payari chaleti tavan asiveram. I don't know the rest. Let us begin tracing the evolutionary process from the point of devastation, Palaya, when the whole universe is filled with water. At that time, there are many fishes and other aquatics And from these aquatics evolve creepers, trees, etc. Sound like Darwin? Almost. From these insects and reptiles evolve, and from them birds, beasts, and human beings, and finally civilized human beings. Now, the civilized being, human being, is at a junction where he can make further evolutionary progress in spiritual life. Here it is stated, Swadharma Nishtha, that when a living entity comes to a civilized form of life, there must be Swadharma, social divisions, according to one's work and qualifications. There's a very interesting verse from Rishabdev, which I was just studying yesterday. And I don't have the exact quote. It just comes in my mind somehow. So one of those, it's in chapter 5, the instructions of Rishabdev. And he goes through the same thing. He even starts with dead matter. And higher than dead matter is the fish, and higher than the fish are the trees and creepers. And he goes all the way up to civilized human life. Then he goes to the demigods. He says, and higher than the human beings are ghosts, and higher than that is the demigods, and higher than the demigods is the Supreme Lord. Then he says, but higher than the Lord, there's one more. Yes, the Brahman, devotees. So it's quite interesting that Rishabdev's instruction. Yes. Tadiyaram samarchanam. Tadiya, the things which belong to the Lord are more worshipable than the Lord himself. So that's a quite, he goes through all the whole thing. And finally at the top, there's the Brahmins. Even above the demigods, above the Lord himself, then there's the Brahmins, the Vaishnavas. So it's quite interesting. We see, of course, we heard Prithu Maharaj's instructions, the Brahmins are the highest. But when you see it like this, in relationship to all these other different species, then it really strikes you. So, and another thing that strikes us is be careful of Vaishnavaparad. So paragraph 2, about 5 lines down. It is also mentioned herein, whoever executes his occupation of duty, Swadharma, for 100 births, for instance, if a Brahmin continues to act as a Brahmin, becomes eligible for promotion to Brahmaloka, the planet where Lord Brahma lives. There is also a planet called Shivaloka or Sadashivaloka, which is situated in a marginal position between the spiritual and material worlds. If, after being situated in Brahmaloka, one becomes more qualified, he is promoted to Sadashivaloka. So this is very much like Brihad Bhagavatamrita here. Similarly, when one becomes even more qualified, he can attain the Vaikunthalokas. The Vaikunthalokas are targets for everyone, even the demigods, and they can be attained by a devotee who has no desire for material benefit. As indicated in Bhagavad Gita, one does not escape material miseries, even if he is elevated to Brahmaloka, Abhuma Bhuvanaloka, Punar Avitano Ujana. Then I skip the quote. Similarly, one is not very safe, even if he is promoted to Shivaloka, because the planet of Shivaloka is marginal. However, if one attains Vaikunthaloka, he attains the highest perfection of life and the end of the evolutionary process. Mamupe itukonteya punarjanma avitate. So this verse is quoted in Brihad Bhagavatamrita 3 times, actually. If you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, this particular verse is quoted 3 times. The first time, it's part 1, chapter 2, verse 49. There's a purport. It talks about the position of Brahma earned by pious workers normally consists in being an associate of Brahma. So it's not that they become Brahma. But normally, if by pious activities, if you go to Brahmaloka, you just become an associate. It says receiving a universe of one's own to rule is much more rare. So to actually get a whole universe requires a lot more than just doing your duty in 100 births. You can go to Brahmaloka. This is what this says here in this purport of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And that then in another place in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, third chapter, verses 104-6, it describes the same thing. This is Lord Shiva speaking. Only one who has completely perfected his religious duties, who is pure, done with selfish motives, can achieve the mercy of Sri Hari. If that mercy is multiplied 100 times, one attains the post of Brahma. And if 100 times more, you can become like me. And if 100 times more, then 100 times more mercy than I, Lord Shiva, he can go to Vaikuntha. So this is a quote, Lord Shiva speaking in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So it's very similar to this verse here in Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada, not Prabhupada, it's whoever who made the purport, Sanatana Goswami wrote the purport to Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So Sanatana Goswami says, some demigods, including Lord Shiva, are qualified for promotion to Vaikuntha, but only after they complete their long appointments as universal rulers and after their subtle bodies are dissolved by attainment of liberation. But pure devotees, graced with a sufficient portion of Lord Vishnu's mercy, need not serve such long terms as demigods. They can achieve Vaikuntha much more quickly. So we don't have to do 100 births of Varnashram. We just have to get the mercy of Lord Krishna, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we can go to Vaikuntha. So the last verse, Vaikuntha means Goloka, by the way. Prabhupada often uses the term interchangeably. So I was giving Gita class and someone said, why are you always saying Vaikuntha? We want to go to Goloka. But actually, Prabhupada uses the term Vaikuntha to mean the whole spiritual world, often. Sometimes it's specific and sometimes it's just very broad meaning. So verse 30, you are all devotees of the Lord, and as such, I appreciate that you are as respectable as the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. I know in this way that devotees also respect me, and I am dear to them. Thus, no one can be as dear to the devotees as I am. So first he was saying that all the devotees, they're very dear to me. And now Lord Shiva is saying, and I am very dear to the devotees. The devotees love me. So then, in the purport, Prabhupada explains, what's the difference between a devotee's worship of Lord Shiva and an asura's worship of Lord Shiva? So then Prabhupada actually shows us, the devotees also worship Lord Shiva. So what's the difference between the two types of worship of Lord Shiva, the devotee and the asura? Yes, so, okay, the devotee worships Lord Shiva to pray for devotional service to Krishna. Help me to become a nice devotee of Lord Krishna. And the asuras? They want something from him. Yes?
Okay, also, the devotee considers Lord Shiva as a first of Vaishnava.
Yes.
A guru.
They see Lord Shiva as guru. And the asuras, they want something else. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, it is said, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, Lord Shiva is the best of all devotees. Therefore, all devotees of Lord Krishna are also devotees of Lord Shiva. Did you ever think about that? Do you ever think that I am also a devotee of Lord Shiva because he's the best devotee? Prabhupada says, all devotees of Lord Krishna are also devotees of Lord Shiva. In Vrindavan, there is Lord Shiva's temple called Gopishwar. The gopis used to worship not only Lord Shiva, but Katyayani, or Durga, as well, but their aim was to attain the favor of Lord Krishna. Devotee of Lord Krishna does not disrespect Lord Shiva, but worships Lord Shiva as the most exalted devotee of Lord Krishna. Consequently, whenever a devotee worships Lord Shiva, he prays to Lord Shiva to achieve the favor of Krishna. He does not request material profit. So then a few lines down, driven by material lust, the asuras worship demigods, but a devotee never does so, for he's never driven by material lust. That is the difference between a devotee's respect for Lord Shiva and asura's respect for him. The asura worships Lord Shiva, takes some benediction, misuses it, and ultimately is killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who awards him liberation. Because Lord Shiva is a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he loves all the devotees of the Supreme Lord. Lord Shiva told the Prachetas that because they were devotees, he loved them very much. Lord Shiva was not kind and merciful only to the Prachetas. Anyone who is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of God is very dear to Lord Shiva. Not only are devotees dear to Lord Shiva, he respects them as much as he respects the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is very wonderful in case you didn't know it. All the devotees of Lord Krishna are very dear to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is dear to the devotees. So this Prabhupada makes this point in the purport. It's a nam aparad to consider Lord Shiva equal. It's an aparad to think the chanting of the name of Hari and chanting of Hara or Shiva are the same. Devotees must always know Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Lord Shiva is his devotee. Indeed, Lord Ram, the Personality of Godhead himself, sometimes worshipped Lord Shiva. If a devotee is worshipped by the Lord, why should a devotee not be worshipped by other devotees on the same level with the Lord? This is the conclusion. So the difference, what is the difference between Lord Shiva's behavior towards the devotees and his behavior towards the asuras? What is his?
Cheating.
Nishkapata kripa. Oh, sorry, sakapata kripa, yes. Formal, yes, that's what Prabhupada says. He blesses the asuras simply for the sake of formality. Simply for the sake of formality. Actually, he loves one who is devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is Lord Shiva. He loves the devotees. And for the asuras, it's just formality. They come for some business, he gives them what they want. So here in this Vrindavan, Lord Shiva is the protector of the holy dham, Kshetrapala. And not only is he protecting, he also guards the Rasa Mandala. So there's a Shiva Linga here at Gopeshwar. It's described, it's 5,000 years old, and it was established by Vajranab, Lord Krishna's grandson. So I'll just briefly summarize the story that one time Krishna was performing Raslila, and Lord Shiva came. He wanted to see. But when he tried to enter, then Lalita and Vishaka stopped him. They said, no, you're a male, you cannot enter. So then Lalita told him, you go have bath in Radharani Sarovar, and then you can enter. So Lord Shiva went, took his bath, and he changed into the form of a gopi. And then he entered the Rasalila. Lord Krishna welcomed him and gave him the name Gopishwar. So he's dressed like a gopi at the Gopishwar temple. So, and he gave, Lord Krishna gave Shiva the boon that without his permission, no one could enter into the Rasamandala. So this is our Lord Shiva here in Vrindavan. Yes. Gopishwar, Lord of the Gopis.
He's just a gopi.
Yes. But he's not just a gopi. He without his permission, no one can enter. He's the one who's, you have to go to, if he's the guard for wrestling. Yeah, Gopishwar. He's a guard for Raslila, Rasamandala. So without his permission, you cannot enter. So therefore, Ishwar. You have to go take permission from him if you want to enter. So I have one nice prayer over here to Lord Shiva from Markandeya Rishi. It's 12th canto, 10th chapter, verse 34 from Markandeya Rishi. Varam ekam vinitape purnakam abhivarshana bhagavatya chitam bhaktim tapareshu satatai. I do request one benediction from you, Markandeya is asking Lord Shiva, who are full of all perfection and able to shower the fulfillment of all desires. I ask to have unfailing devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and for his dedicated devotees, especially you. So that was the prayer of Markandeya Rishi. I have one more prayer here to Lord Shiva. This is in Mayapur. Actually, not only in Vrindavan, in Mayapur also, Lord Shiva is the protector of the dham, Kshetrapala, Antardweep, the island where Lord Chaitanya appeared at Yogapeeth, at the place of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. There is a Shiva linga known as Kshetrapala Mahadev, protector of the dham, right at Yogapeeth in Vrindavan. And he has been in Mayapur since the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In Bhakti Ratnakara, Shri Narhari Thakur describes, Enabadipa Ketrapala Shiva Hoy, Appara Mahima Linga Rupe Vilashai, Nachinam Prabhu Kirtane Mutitari, Tara Abhilash Purna Kaya Gorhari. The unlimited glorious Kshetrapala Shiva stays in Nabadweep and displays his pastimes in the form of a linga. To dance in the kirtan of Prabhu Gorhari, he assumed his original form, and thus Mahaprabhu fulfilled all his desires. So there is a prayer which the devotees sing to Lord Shiva in Mayapur. in Bengali. O he kshatrapala Shiva, tumi doyamai, Krishna bhakti deho more, hoi ashadai. O kshatrapala Shiva, protector of the Dham, you are so merciful. Please be kind to me and give me love for Krishna. So these are our prayers to Lord Shiva. Even Mahaprabhu, he sang prayers to Lord Shiva, which I think they might be in this magazine. I'm not sure. I think there's some prayers here by Sri Shivastakam, spoken by Lord Chaitanya from Srila Murari Gupta's Sri Chaitanya Charita Maha Kavya. Lord Shiva is offering prayers. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offering prayers to Lord Shiva, and if you hear these prayers with rapt attention, you can quickly gain Sri Hari Prema, along with knowledge, realization of the knowledge, and unprecedented powers. So these prayers are in this book here, Krishna Katamrita. He sang them. Yes, on his way to Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya came to Bhubaneswar, and he saw all the places of Lord Shiva. He entered the house of Purari. He went to visit, actually, Lord Shiva in Bhubaneswar, personally. And he bowed his head in front of tiger-skin-dressed ascetic. And then he offered prayers. He met Lord Shiva in Bhubaneswar. Yes. Yeah, Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of a devotee. And so he came there, his prayers, offering obeisances to Lord Shiva, a festival for the eyes of Gauri. You know, these are all the prayers. Dispel the darkness with your three eyes, the moon, the sun, and fire. Create auspiciousness for all living entities, whose potency easily defeats thousands of moons and suns. Your form brilliantly illuminated by the jewels of Ananta, king of snakes, clothed by a tiger skin that radiate divine effulgence, who sit upon a thousand-petaled lotus, whose two arms are adorned by lustrous mangoes. And these are the prayers. O Ram, O Govinda, O Mukunda, O Shari, O Krishna, O Narayan, O Vasudev, you are the monarch of intoxicated bee-like devotees who are maddened by drinking the nectar of these and other holy names, and you destroy all grief. You are forever inquired of confidentially by Sri Narada and other sages. You grant favors to them very quickly. Unto you who bestows the happiness of Hari Bhakti, unto you who create auspiciousness, unto you who are the guru of everyone, I offer my respectful obeisances. This is Lord Chaitanya. And these prayers are from Murari Gupta's book, Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya. So, this is Lord Shiva. We are very fortunate to have Lord Shiva present with us today as we are speaking his glories. So, we have any questions or comments or glorification of Lord Shiva? Yes, Adi Purush. One of the reasons we need his mercy
is that he rules this purusha demand, the conception that men enjoy and endure.
Okay, one of the reasons we need his mercy is he rules this false ego, purusha abhiman, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer.
And he himself was, even though he is the Lord, he was able to give this up and become a gopi.
So even though he's Lord like that, he was able to give this up and become a gopi. So he can also help us do that. We can also give up our abhiman and become an eternal associate of Lord Krishna, gopi, cowherd boy, whatever. Yes, very nice comment. Vanamali.
Text 25.
Oh, yeah. He's not white.
Like molten gold.
Glowing. Interesting.
This color, this golden color is like having the three personalities, like Chaitanya,
Radharani. Yeah. All the merciful personalities have the golden color. He's making this point. Lord Chaitanya, Radharani, and Lord Shiva. Most merciful of all, they have this golden color. And that's a nice observation. Okay. Any other? Yes.
How do we reconcile every time Prabhupada describing the evolution
evolution. How do we reconcile? Oh yeah, he's going to explain that somewhere else, that actually it's an evolution of consciousness. Yes. Yeah.
And so how do we reconcile that with the Brahma creating?
Okay, so the question is, so how do we reconcile this description of only water and then this, and then at the same time the most intelligent Lord Brahma is there? So how okay, how Lord Brahma first created the Kumaras.
Later on, he created the lower species.
Later on, he created lower species. Yeah. Okay, so how do we reconcile that? That's the question. Yes? There's a subtle creation also on the subtle platform. Yeah, everything has to be there. Actually, I've also heard him say that everything was there at the beginning of creation, all species at the same time. I've heard that in Purport. He says everything was there.
At the same time? Well,
yeah.
It's not at the same time.
Yes.
It's not at the same time. It's yeah.
But when he talks about this evolutionary process, what he actually means to say, and he does say it, I don't know if he says it here, but there's another place where he mentions this, and I remember it striking me, that this is an evolution of consciousness, that this is also true. It may not be that this is from the beginning of creation, although here he says, palaya, he says, from destruction, that it's there. But just because there is this evolution going on, it doesn't mean that Lord Brahma is also not there at the same time. That we're like at the beginning of creation, you have living entities that are all at different levels of consciousness, many, many different levels of consciousness. So Lord Brahma is there, and then these other levels, they also have to, we have to come up through all these different species to come to the human form of life. So it's not that just because we're way, way down there, very low, that it's not that Lord Brahma is not there at the same time. What did you mean? Yeah. Also, if you
it can be a second sense that creates only on the level.
Yeah. But no. But another. Yeah. Okay. Another point also is that when you come to sixth canto, you'll see there's another creation, of all the, from Daksha's daughters.
Yeah.
You know, there's another. So it can also be seen that there are different creations in the different manus. It's quite possible. Looks like there was one at Lord Brahma's time at Swayambhuvamanu. There was a creation. And then we hear also that there are different types of demigods with each change of manu. There's a new set of demigods. There's a whole new set. And so then at Chakshu, there's a whole new set of everything. That the Daksha's daughters, the birds, the beasts, the everything. It's like, again, well, what about, then you'll say, well, what about at the beginning? Weren't they there? But the It's like there's again, there's again creation. Again there's devastation. Again, there was a devastation at the end of, or at the beginning of Chakshushamanu, one of those. There's a Vaivasvata Manu, there was a devastation. Okay, there's Sankirtan's explanation, you can copy it. And then you can study it and then figure it out.
What is last becomes first.
What is last becomes first.
That's what Jesus said.
Yes. Well, you can take it as the yugas, Satya Treta, was it Satya Treta Dvapara Kali? Or some say Satya Dvapara Treta Kali. There's Satya first and Kali last, so we have all the good people, And then all the bad people come at the end. So how are you going to get the good people, you know, right after Kali Yuga? Where are all the good people going to come from? It's another question. Like everyone's, of course, everyone's killed, I guess. That's the answer. And they all become good. At the end of Kali Yuga, Kalki comes and kills everyone. They get, go to the mode of goodness, promotion. Yeah. Okay. So if you study the quote of Srila Prabhupada about devastation, the asuras are there. He comes to save the Vedas. If you actually take the quote literally, that this was the beginning and there was only water, but then the asura, the demons are also there. And the Lord had to come to save the Vedas. Yes.
Even before the creation of Brahma, there are some demigod prototypes.
Yes, before the creation of Brahma, there are demigod prototypes. Way before Brahma. Well, they were also, Brahma was also there. Another Brahma.
Yeah.
Prototype Brahma. Prototype Brahma was there. In Golok. In Golok? Transcendental demigods. Yeah, I read one somewhere that in Vaikuntha, the demigods are present with Lord Vishnu, but they're transformed. They're in their original forms, in their original forms, as energies. Yeah. Not all of them. Some of them are actually conditioned souls also. Some of the demigods in this... No, not in spiritual world. I mean here. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Oh, in spiritual world. Okay. Yeah, I got confused. Okay, any more questions or comments on this? You can all think about this. I thought about that question of Madhavendra Puri last time about how Swayambhuva Manu. So since we have a little time, I can just tell you what I came up with. That's because I'm studying at the same time Priyavrata. The question is, how can Swayambhuva Manu be present at the same time as Prithu Maharaj's lila? Because in BTG it says Prithu Maharaj was at the Chakshusha Manu, during Chakshusha Manu. So what I understand is that Swayambhuva Manu, Prithu Maharaj, all this lila was taking place during Swayambhuva Manu. It's during his time, his life. Not necessarily that he was ruling, other people were ruling during his life, but it was during his life. And then Priyavrata came, and then after Priyavrata, then the next, after that, then the Manu, there's a Manu called Swarochisa, is the son of Agni. And then after that, there's three sons of Priyavrat, Uttama, Tamasa, and Raivata. So Swayambhuva Manu must have left at the time of Swarochisa Manu. But it appears that he was living all the way up to the time of that Manu, and that was after Priyavrata. So then we find, but then where's the question of the gap between Prithu and the appearance of Daksha in Chakshusha Manu? So then if you read about the Prachetas later on, we'll hear that they ruled for 1 million celestial years of the demigods. So they were alive for a very long time. Apparently they were alive from Swayambhuva Manu, Swarochisa Manu, Uttama Tamasa, all the Manus, they were still living. And then finally in Chakshusha they had Daksha as their son. So that's where the gap is filled. That they were ruling, actually, but they were ruling at this, they were not Manus. At the same time they were ruling, there were also Manus who were living. And these were these, yes. 365 billion. It's not that long.
1 month
is how many?
330.
330?
Million.
It's not six, but...
Five.
Four. Can be four.
Six,
so yeah. It's first, yeah. So 2, 3, 4, 5. 4 months.
So that's already 1 billion years from two.
Yeah, so a million celestial years could be a billion years, our years.
A billion?
Could be. I know you have to figure it out. A million celestial years. Figure it out.
So,
yes. You have something? No. Nice to show? On the blackboard, yeah. Well, if somebody is a mathematician, you can figure out how much is a million celestial years in our calculation. Yeah, one day, one demigod day is 1 year here. Oh, so you multiply a million by 365, so it's only 365 million. It's not much. Okay, so that doesn't answer it then, if it's only 365 million. No, you have to multiply by more than, 365 is one. Okay. I don't know. Anyway. I don't know. I have to think about it. Okay, Haribo, all glories to Shiva Prabhupada.